What were you hunting down in Mexico?
We were hunting ducks and calling predators, coyotes, you know. So okay. It's a duck hunt, but I know these guys real well, and they let me go call coyotes. And coyotes have never been called down there before, so makes you look like you know what you're doing.
That always helps. Well, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Save for the Blind podcast. My name is Carson, and I am the hunt program coordinator here with CWA. At the table across from me, we have Scott Mueller, who's going to be our co-host today. And on this podcast, we have Terry, the owner of Mojo Decoys and Mojo Outdoors. So welcome.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
So, Terry, I'm just going to start off. I've heard rumors from multiple people about how this whole thing Mojo started, the spinning wing decoy started. I heard, it originated in California. You guys bought a patent. Can you set the record straight on how everything began?
I can and I will. It always kind of surprises me that that's one of the most frequent questions we get asked. You know, why exactly people are going to know that? I don't know, but it seems to be of great interest. So it's a it's a story that takes 5 or 10 minutes to tell if you want to.
Yeah,
know
absolutely. Please, we're here to tell stories.
Okay. In the spinning wing concept did in fact originate from California in about the mid-90s. I don't know exactly what year, but maybe nobody knows what year. But somehow they caught on to that concept out there. I've heard several stories about that, but they're just rumored. One of them was that they were using big fans to dry strawberries, and they noticed a mallard, the resident mallard there would work the fans. And, I've heard some other stories, but nevertheless, it did come out of California, and maybe in the mid-90s it were. And then in the year 1999, during the duck season, in December, during the duck season, one of these devices found its way in the market down to the lower Mississippi Valley, or Lower Mississippi Flyway. And there was a guy named Robert Matthews. He was a farmer. He was up in the valley, and I think he had a partner, but I'm not real clear on that. By the time I dealt with him, he did not have. But he developed this decoy that he called the Fatal Deduction. And a guy from California came and hunted with a man y'all may know, Jeff Simmons. Jeff from Simmons Sporting Good. Up in Bastrop, Louisiana, which is about 30 miles north of our home, which is in Monroe, Louisiana. But it's a gigantic sporting goods store. But a guy came from California to hunt with him for some reason or other. I don't know what. And he brought one of these. And Jeff, Jeff didn't believe in it. When the concept was first introduced, it wasn't necessarily intuitive. You didn't look at it and say, yeah, this thing will call a duck. Yeah, and so he wouldn't let the guy put it out. And then, as Jeff tells the story, on the third morning, I guess there's only 3 days. On the third morning, he let the guy put it out. It just sucked the mallards in it. So now Jeff's instantly a believer in this. So he tries to buy some so he could sell it to it in his sporting goods store, because he started telling his customers about it, and they all wanted one, but he couldn't buy it. The way that came about, the demand quickly overtook the supply, with Mr. Matthews and whoever else might have been in that with him. So Jeff calls really the main player in Mojo, who is a lifelong friend of mine. He and I grew up, and his name is Murray Crow. And Murray came out of a big farming family, farming big land, and he was around a lot of equipment and things like that. But he really loved race cars and doing things like that. So really, that's what he was doing. His father and his brother had died. He got out of farming, moved to Monroe, kicking around a cord, but he'd build anything. So Jeff calls Murray and asks Murray, can he build him some of these decoys? And Murray said, yeah, I'll do that for you. So he sends one of these Fatal Deductions over there. Murray gets to looking at it. And the way they built the very first ones, they took a high-speed motor, a little small high-speed gear motor, kind of like what runs an old VCR, remote control car or something like that. And in order to slow it down, they had to put a pair of pulleys on it with a little drive belt. The drive belt was an O-ring, and the thing worked, except that, it was noisy, and the little drive system, wouldn't sustain the winds, or wouldn't sustain getting wet or stuff like that. Well, Murray didn't know how to size the pulleys. So he calls me, and I've been in the engineering business my whole life. I own a couple of engineering firms, and he called me just looking for help. sizing these pulleys. And he starts telling me about this decoy. And I guess I'm about like Jeff was back then. I was intrigued by it. So I just kept asking him over and over again. I said, what kind of decoy is this? Where are you talking about? White on one side, dark on the other side. And he didn't know. He don't like duck hunting. He's an avid hunter, a great whitetail hunter, but he don't like duck hunting. And finally he said, I don't know. He said, can you size the pulleys or not? I said, yeah, that's nothing to it. I'll come up to your shop at noon tomorrow. So noon the next day, I go to his shop. We get to looking at this thing. First conclusion we come to, that's not a very good way of building this product. So Murray says at the moment, he says, I think I know how to do it. Just go back to your office, go back tomorrow. So, okay. I go back to my office, I come back tomorrow. Well, he had developed in one night, you know, what came known in the industry thereafter was the drink drive system. And having been around all that machinery, there was a reason I brought up the fact that in the farm, if you've been around big, epic machinery, all that stuff up until maybe 10 or 15 years ago was 24 volt. And he had some 24 volt roller motors, like runs a fan up in the cab of one of those pieces of equipment, double shafted, Jeff coming out of each end. So, you know, it was pretty simple. He just hooked the wings directly to the motor shaft. But in DC motors, as most of the people that's listening to us would probably know this, on DC motors, you know, is totally opposed to AC motors, which would be what you'd plug into your wall around your house. And DC motors, the speed turns proportional to the voltage that's supplied to it. And so he took a 6-volt Landier battery, hooked it to the 24-volt motor, and that cut the speed down to 25%. But those little motors typically turn 2,800, 3,000, 200 RPM. So when you cut that in fourth, it's 750 RPMs thereabouts. And so you got it at the right speed without having any of these pulleys, belts, gears, anything like that. And then he liked to build and race dirt track race cars, ballast people, race a engine, do a thing like that. And he had a bunch of sheets of aluminum, 4x8 sheets of aluminum, which is what they wrapped those cars with back in those days. They still do it, I don't know. And so he took those aluminum sheets, which is just what he happened to have on hand, and cut the wings out of those, and that's where the aluminum wings come from. I never heard him say anything that indicated that he thought aluminum was better for it. As it turns out, it is, because the more dense that it is, the more reflective that it is, you know. So the aluminum wings were more reflective than the plastic wings that they were using on the other ones. And he got on his way and, you know, cut out some wing shafts that would connect the wings directly to the motor. You know, take some decoys, cut the back out of them, stick that in there, get a 6-volt Landier pattern, hooked it to it, and you had it. From a durability point of view or an effective point of view, you got perfect spinning wing decoy. In the meanwhile, while he was doing that, you know, Robert Matthews had filed for a patent on his device. But in that patent, he had the concept of it too, and then he had the little mechanism they had in it with the wings. But back to Murray, he recruited some of his other buddies at race car and all had shops and stuff like that to help you build those. And however many they could make each day, they would take the seven sporting goods at the end of the day. The people would come pick them up right then. So nobody ever owned one for more than a day up until the final user got them. And so I got one. They let me have one. That was all. And so I had that one, and I didn't believe in it. I didn't believe in it either. And but I can't remember the details of this, but me and another engineer, as soon as I got that one, went hunting down at a farm that I have at Calhoun Parish, great duck place, like on a weekday. I do believe it was Wednesday. I don't know if we went down there to just try this thing out or we were going anyway. We just took it with us, but nobody was hunting anywhere else. And my duck field on our farm, probably 2 miles back from the nearest public road. So we go back to this, my favorite plot, and I put this thing out, and I will always remember this, even though I'm 2 miles from the road, nobody can be looking at me. I look around on my shoulder to make sure nobody's watching me. That's how foolish I felt at the moment. And so I put it out, I turn it on, I start slowly wading back to my blind because it's not shooting time yet. I just don't hurry up. And I hear it. I turned around, I bet 30 or 40 miles laying around on top of this thing. So I said, wait a minute, must be something to this. And so it sold me. Most anybody that took one out 1999 and a few years thereafter. You know, it didn't take but a few minutes to prove how effective it was. So Murray went on making those every day up until the end of season. And when the end of season came, there was no further demand. Jeff Simmons didn't need any more, so he quit that and went back to fiddling in cars and doing things like that. But I could see the great potential in that. And so I kept telling Murray, I said, Murray, you're going to go with me just making those things. You're good at that kind of stuff, you know. And he wasn't doing a whole lot with him cars anyway. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. And so next time I'd see, I'd say the same thing. And next time I'd say the same thing. So I kind of figured out along the way that he don't like the business part of business. You know, he's a typical inventor, you know, tinkerer, perfectionist, you know. So the business part of business doesn't agree with him. So I say one day, I said, Murray, if you want to go in that business, I'll go in it with you. And he said, I'll do that. I said, okay, I set up a business. I take care of the finances, do all that stuff. I was already in a couple of engineering businesses, so I was well equipped to do that. And I said, well, you know, you can build them. I can set the business up and running. Somebody's got to sell it. And that's not me and you. We're not salesmen by any means, you know. So we eventually went back to this guy, Jeff Simmons, because he owns this big sporting goods store, well known in the sporting good industry. So we formed a corporation, you know, with the three of us in it. And if I could back up just a minute, I missed one very important point. When he first started making these, he tells me one day, he said, I need to give my decoy a name. And I said, yeah, you did. And he said, you got any ideas what a name would be? I said, I don't know, Mark. Take whatever you like. And he said, no, help me with that. You know, I'm not good at that. So I said, well, I can tell you this much. In corporate America today, it's not long and complicated anymore. They're way from that. It's short and snappy, easy to remember, rolls off the tongue. You know, it's IBM, it's Apple. You know, it's something like that. So you need something very, you know, very catchy, easy to come up with. So he said, okay, I get that. What you think it'd be? Well, I grew up on a farm also, but my parents did not farm for a living. We just had a farm. And my dad had a degree in agriculture. He worked in agriculture, and he wanted us boys. He grew up on a farm. He wanted us boys to grow up on the farm. But I grew up on mostly a hand labor farm. I was a hand laborer, so I was determined to get off that farm. But nevertheless, already we had a little machine, and I don't really know what it was. My dad didn't really know what it was, but it had a pair of tractor wheels on it. It had a gasoline engine. It had a clutch and a pair of handles out the back. And my dad said he thought it was someone's garden plow one time, but we didn't use it for that. He would use it to pull empty trailers around, stuff like that. And he would say, get that Bojo and bring it over and hook it to the truck. And I heard that old time I was growing up. And I said, you remember that, Murray? He said, yeah, I do. I said, well, nothing easier to remember, roll off the tongue, you know, never forget, than the word Mojo. And he said, okay. So I go back to my engineering company, and I have a very gifted PR type lady there, very gifted in graphics and writing and all that stuff. And she would do proposals for us in the engineering world. We'd sit proposals in for these projects, you know. And so I told her, I said, look, we need to make Murray some stickers for his decoy. So she made some, and she called it a Mojo Mallard. And she made these stickers, and if you find one of the very first ones, actually the first few years, they'll have a nylon sticker stuck on the motor on the inside that says Mojo Mallard. And so we sold them, you know, like that. I'm catching back up to where I was a while ago. But so, season's over with. He and I and Jeff Simmons decided we would start business. So Jeff was going to go to one of the buying group shows, and so we were trying to determine how many of these things do we need to make. We have no idea. And Jeff said, well, I'm going to Sports Inc., I believe it was, and be there a week. And when I come back, I'll talk to everybody I can, have a pretty good idea how many I think I can sell. And so he tells Murray, said, you be working while I'm gone and see, determine how many you can make. So we're just busy making these things by hand. And so, okay, do that. So, you know, we'll jump forward a week or two. And Jeff is home, so he calls us, and we go up and have a meeting with him. Jeff said, I think I can sell 7,500. And so, I mean, you think you can make Murray? So Murray had a piece of paper in his hand, and he laid it down on the table, and it said 7,500. Now, that's a stroke of luck that we both have to deal. But nevertheless, we built a business plan on making and selling 7,500 of these things. And so jump back to where I left off. I'll go. The PR later is going to start making us some taglines and, you know, logos and that type of stuff. And she made them all. You know, our original tagline was, it ain't magic if it ain't Ojo, you know. Mm-hmm. So she made that. She made the duck in the soul, and she did all that other stuff. So one day she walks into my office and she said, they called me Denman around there, not my first name. They said, Denman, you know what Mojo made? No, ma'am, I ain't got a coin. And she said, well, you're the luckiest SOB alive because it means magic. So quite by accident, we have named your product a magic mallard. I said, really? I'd rather be lucky than you. So anyway, so it went from there. And that first year when we set out to make 7,500, we made and sold a little over 15,000.
So wow. What year was that?
That was the year 2000.
Wow.
It'd be the 2021, 2001 hunting season.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a couple things. Rob Matthews, big rice farmer in the area, District 10. So I know Rob, big supporter of CWA. And the other partner you mentioned there was actually, my understanding was Greg Cornell, who was at the time a caterer for us, Silver Sage Caterers. And I heard about these things back in there. I've been obviously with CWA since 99. So I think right at the time all this was going about, and it was interesting to hear about these. And as a duck hunter, to have the same feelings I think you had experienced when you first saw them. You know, you put it out, but you
think no way.
Yeah, you look around your you look over your shoulder like I'm gonna look like an idiot out here with this thing in the water. And in fact, I had hunting wise, I had a first experience just like that. It wasn't with the duck deco, is actually with the blade, which were, I think, kind of around that same time. And I actually told my hunting partner, I'm not going to put that out. It's going to, you know, it's going to scare them away. So what an awesome story. And I mean, it's just obviously the connection to California and the fact that you and your partners took this business where it's at today is just an awesome testament to your genius and seeing a brand, seeing a product, and then innovating. I mean, we'll get into the new products that are now out and just how many of these decoys are now being sold. Can you tell us the number now, 15,000 to what?
Oh, no, it would be more than that, but we make so many different SKUs. Yep. And the duck, you know, in the duck world, you'd have to go back and add them all up. But I think probably in a typical year, we would sell around 100,000 of the duck decoys in sales, you know, so. People always find it interesting. Our number one selling product is the duck decoy.
Oh, really?
But we don't have 15 different versions of the duck decoy either. You know? So that would make a difference. But, you know, I remembered something about Robert Matthews when you said that. You know, I mentioned earlier that Robert had filed for a patent on the device that he built, but he also had the concept in his patent. So we filed for a patent on the direct drive, but we don't have the concept. So he filed a year before we did, and he has issued a year before we did. And so we filed a year later, and it issued a year later. By the time ours issued, Robert wasn't making his little device anymore. He was making, you know, what we had filed for a patent from. So our patent attorney suggested that we get with him and see if we could cross-license one another. And then between the two patents, we had everything. And so we meet with him actually at SHOT Show and propose that to him. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, look, guys, I really need to get back to rice farm. Yeah. And that's what I do for a living. And he said, how about I just sell y'all this? And I said, okay. So we made a deal with him. We bought his company just to get his patent. And so the rumors that float around about that, you know, I've heard of, they'll get pretty far to the right or left or whatever, but it was really, you know, quite simple. He wanted to get back in sure. Farming. Apparently he was spending a good bit of time doing this. And anybody that ever goes in the business of doing something like that, you know, finds out pretty quick it's a lot more work than thought it's going to be. And so we bought it, you know, we bought his company to get his patent and he went back to rice farming, I guess. I haven't heard from him in years, but he was a nice guy, and he really got his started, you know, started very well. But I didn't cover the park when I said, you know, it probably started about the mid-90s, you know. They started with that big blade that you referenced a minute ago, which everybody called the Golden Post.
Yep.
and a guy named McBride, I do not remember what his first name is, he got a patent on that big blade, the Golden Post thing. And I've seen some evidence that some guy was ahead of him on it, but he didn't get his patent on it. Up quick enough. Now, I've just seen some evidence. I'm not saying that's true. I don't really know. But the big blade certainly got the concept going. And I guess the next logical move was to put in the duck body, you know.
So were you guys the first ones to introduce the duck body to the spinning wing? Or did that come when you guys saw it from California? Was it just a wing when you guys saw it from California?
No, those guys put it in a deco and brought it. I've seen pictures of one of the original ones in California, and of course the guy had the big blade, the Golden Post, and another guy had a decoy with some great big wings on it, where his two wings together was as big as, if not larger than, you know, the big blade.
Yeah,
and I never seen it work or anything. I just saw some pictures where the guy was doing an interview or something like that. So the concept totally came out of the valley up in California.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. I mean, how far, you know, it's come. And me and Scott were kind of talking before we started this podcast, is what do you see for the future? I mean, how much further can this go? And what is the future of spinning wing decoys or motion decoys in general? It seems like almost people are reverting to a sense. I know a lot of people in California are going back to the goalpost instead of the traditional decoy with the two spinning wings. And where's the industry going as far as motion decoys right now?
Well, yeah, right now they're mostly going into water motion instead of wings. And if you can make your decoys look exactly like live ducks, obviously that's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not anywhere close to that. I mean, you take a video, you guys would have a lot of experience in that, but you know, you look at a video of a set of ducks on the water, on dry ground, it doesn't matter if they relaxed, if they're not alert or whatever, you know. They typically make it a lot of noise, a lot of motion. I mean, it's like a bunch of hogs in the water sometimes. And so, you know, there's an endless number of things that you could do in order to make your decoys look more lifelike, but you know, you have to inject the practicality into it. You know, you can't go out there with three dozen mechanical decoys all doing, you know, different things. It's just too much. It's too much work. It's too much maintenance on them. It's too much. So, you know, I don't see that happening, but you know, there are steps that go in directions. A few years ago, we came out with the Flock of Flicker. Y'all probably familiar with the Flock of Flicker. And I worked on that for years before I could make it look like I wanted to look before I brought it out. And then we didn't do a very good job of making it, so we took it off the market and came back a year later to fix all our problems with it. But, you know, ducks, fortunately for all of us, ducks will catch on to most anything you put out there. Unless you could make a set of decoys look exactly like live ducks, they're going to catch on to it. So it wasn't, you know, all that many years after the spinning wing decoy came out that, you know, people was talking about ducks flaring, you know, off of them. And they do. I've seen that. And my belief is that decoy is just making a lot more flash than a duck could make. And the ducks basically, you know, catch on to it, especially the aged ducks, you know, probably an aged hen mallard, you know, would be the first one to catch off to it. And I think that's what they could detect when they got up close. And so a lot of people don't use it then, but you know that, and I'm the wrong messenger for this, okay? But you know that, so they don't want to use one, so they take it out and spray it. And you know, really it's not affecting me from a businessman, because they still bought the decoy. They don't want to put in a spray it. But to properly use a spinning wing decoy, you first need to understand you know, what it does and how it's different from motion, because unfortunately we all started off calling those things motion decoy, and they're really not a motion decoy. If the wings are turning fast enough to generate the strobe, you barely see any movement, you know. So, you know, here at Bojo, when I, you know, write things up or do interviews or whatever I do, you know, I first try to get the people to separate their thought process into two different parts. One of them is the spinning wing concept. It stands alone by itself. And then motion, you know, just movement of something. But back to the, you know, flock of ducks sitting there, you don't see one great big flash like a spinning wing decoy does. You see a lot of little random flashes that pass through the set of ducks, you know. I kind of like to liken them to what we call lightning bugs. Y'all may call them fireflies out there. Mm-hmm. That some part of the country. But, you know, when they're out at night, you just see a flash, 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 flash. And that's what I try to simulate with the flock of flickers. But the point of all that is that as far as where the system can go from here, you know, you can do things. The decoy itself does not actually have to move or whatever. You know, you can do that out in a spread and the ducks can't tell the difference. So that takes you in a lot of different directions right there of things that you could make. And then, as I said before, you know, disturbance of the water surface is the most popular thing going out there now. And we have some new products. I think you saw them at the SHOT Show that, you know, to do that with. And I've been on quite a few months this year, and of course I talked to a lot of people who do that. And on days when you don't have any wind, you know, it could really help you. If you have a lot of wind, then you probably don't need as much of that as you do. Even though it will help even on a windy day, because it breaks up the repetitive cycle of the waves that the wind's making. It makes it look like something else is there.
Sure.
You know, making ripples on the water. But, you know, there are places you can go. Certainly, there's enough technology available today to do all kinds of different things. It's just as a practical matter, the duck hunter, I mean, you know, y'all know duck hunting is rough on equipment. It's really rough on equipment. And, you know, everybody we hunt with, they throw their Mojo in the bottom of the boat on the back of the four wheeler or whatever like that, you know. So the more sophisticated they get, the more maintenance problem you're going to have in treating equipment like that. So
yeah.
I don't think it's anywhere near the end of it. I think you see on a lot of things that I don't know how practical they really are. And, you know, people that are hunters would love to be in the industry, and I get it. I mean, I was glad to be in the industry myself, and so they think of it with a product, you know, they'll develop it and try to put it on the market, and that's good. I mean, that's what the American system is about. But I see they get some kind of what I'd call not very practical products out there. So I don't know, but it's not at its end yet. There'll be a lot of innovation come forward.
Well, I think that's the ingenious part about hunters and duck hunters specifically is everybody has their little gadgets that they have on top of the ones you know buy from Mojo. And I think it's cool about what we do is that people have different things that they do that are effective. And then obviously, you know, you talk about the motion. I did get to see the new
the triple whammy,
the Mallard machine. That's new for 24, which are fantastic new products. I mean, the amount of movement of water that Mallard machine does is phenomenal. And just like you said, I think it's key. You can't just put the spinning wing out. You have to have the motion on top of it just to, like you said, to look more natural in the water.
So. Yeah, and the spinning wing decoy, highest and best use is and always has been long range attraction. But because at the very beginning, the ducks want to land right on top of them, the hunters looked at them as a finishing device.
Yeah.
And that was not their original intention. Their original intention was long range attraction. And that's why I said earlier, you know, the right thing to do is not to use the spinning wing decoy. If they don't want to land folks, do it, put it over there. You don't have to put your decoy spread. I put it 100 yards behind me on the dry ground, but it'll attract ducks from a long distance off that you will see if you did not have it there, because a duck, they see a thing for miles. A duck's going to fly 3-5 miles away, you know, see that thing swing by there, and then you'd have to use your duck hunting skills after that see if you can land it. But it's a mistake not to run one.
Yeah.
And I as I'll say one more time, I'm the wrong messenger.
I know you had talked about practicality and your decoys. What happened when you guys decided to do the Spoonzilla, and whose idea was that to throw a smiling spoonie on a Mojo pole?
Well, it was Randy Russell's. getducks.com. It's okay. And, you know, my co-host in TV, the guy that actually got me into the TV business years ago, right after we came out in Mojo, Mike Mort. And Mike Mort passed away a few years ago, but he's quite well known in the hunting industry. And he introduced me to Ramsey Russell. But Mike and Ramsey, you know, were both from Mississippi. And in Mississippi at that time, they shot spoonbills. Well, I'm over here in the Mississippi River Valley, Delta, Louisiana. You know, we call it ourselves trophy hunter. We didn't shoot spoonbills. We shot mallards. And the first time him and his partner, Jim Jones, came up with me in that same blind I studied about a while ago, I had a spring-loaded lid on it with a jerk string, you know, so I could jerk the string and lid it flat back, you know. And so when the ducks would come, we'd get them working around. I would undo that string and hold it lit with my hand, and then I could keep calling doing that. So here come these whole flock of spoonbills. And I never gave any thought that they wanted to shoot those spoonbills, you know. So when they finally broke down after all the decoys, I'm trying to hold the lid down, and they tear the lid out of my hand and throw it up and just shoot these spoons. I said, what are y'all doing? They said, well, we shoot these ducks, and they make ducks and spoonbills. You know? And I believe different today, so y'all don't jump on me back then. I've come around. Randy says I've come around to the dark side, you know. So I ended up kind of going in the video business with them. And so it got to be a running joke between us over here don't shoot spoonbills, them people where I do shoot spoonbills. And we got in with Ramsey a good bit, and Mike and Ramsey was over on the Red River between North Texas and Oklahoma doing a hunt. And it was lake season, and there was something with a guy named J.J. Kent. He passed away, unfortunately, but he was a great guy out there back in that area. So it was getting tough. You know, last weekend the season is getting tough. And so he kind of said, look, I got a pond just covered with ducks. All the ducks can get this pond. And they said, oh, one is good. It's good. Well, there's one problem. So what's that? They all spoonbills. So it don't matter to us. It don't matter to us, you know. He said, well, there's another problem. It's a sewer pond. We'll hide that in a camera. They won't be able to see that. So they go over and shoot limits of spoonbills, you know. And then by the time that gets to me, Ramsey says that I said, I don't know if it did or not, that you two cannot go off again without adult supervision. And so that's kind of what got the big controversy going. So fast forward a few years, and Ramsey and I are in Obregon, Sonora, Mexico, hunting those Mexican mallards. And so in Mexico, more formal than we are now in the United States. You know, they got a dining room. They won't start eating until everybody gets seated, you know, that, you know. So I see Ramsey walk into this room with his hunting coat over his arm like a waiter would have, you know, the towel over his arm. And I see my two cameramen stand up. So I know they're up to some kind of no good, you know. So Ramsey springs that spoon, the original Spoonzilla, which he didn't call Spoonzilla. He called a Ramzilla after Ramsey. And it just like the one we made, except it had a gold tooth instead of missing tooth. And so they get up and they go embarrass me, play a joke on me, whatever, you know. And then I think Randy's original intention was to give me that decoy. I mean, he handed it out to me before I get my hand on it. He jerked it back, and I've never had it since then. You know? But we go hunting with it the next 2 or 3 days and make little phone videos and put them on social media, and they, you know, get all these numbers and everything. So everybody says, you know, look, y'all sell one of those. So I said, okay, so we'll make one, you know. Can't make one with a gold tooth, but we can make one with a missing tooth, you know. So, that does seem to be of interest to people. I said, well, you know, we're going to make fun of somebody. Now, what race of people is okay with you making fun of? Us rednecks. We don't care. Jeff Foxworthy got real rich making fun of us rednecks, you know. So what's a good redneck do? I got a missing tooth. That's how we got to the missing tooth.
That is a wild story. Yeah. I mean, they must sell pretty well. I've seen a bunch of them out there.
Yeah, they did. They sold real well. The first year, they just went zoom, fast as you can get them out there, they sold. And then they slowed down to be a more reasonable product. But you know, they're a good gift idea, good Christmas presents. And, you know, people, we get all kind of pictures where people put them on their Christmas tree as Christmas decorations.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a fun type thing. And I'm something a little different.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard this. I was telling Chuck this, that our one of our biggest dinners in the state, Clusa dinner run by Drake and Tiffany Fasaro up there in Duck Country up in Clusa. They do table sponsors, and they have the pintail, the mallard, and then the spoony tables. Well, every single table, depending on what you buy, has a mojo on top of the table spinning. So you walk, I'm going to have to dig up some video and pictures and send you, but you walk into the room and there's 40 mojos in that room spinning on top of the tables. And it is a sight to see, and pretty awesome. And, you know, we've got the Spoonzilla represented there and obviously the pintail and the mallard, but, what a cool product, what a great dinner. And there isn't a duck hunter probably in the world that doesn't know the name Mojo, which I think just says a lot about what you've done and what your company's been able to do. You know, you are, I'm going to say like the Xerox of copying, right? You know, you see a spinning wing decoy and I think everybody says, well, that's a Mojo, mm-hmm. a Mojo decoy. And what a testament to you guys.
Even if they're not Mojos, yeah. a lot of people say, oh, I got my Mojo.
It's, yep.
Yeah. It's synonymous with spinning wing decoy at this point.
Well, thank you. Thank you for those kind words. You can go to most any kind of outdoor, especially hunting type convention, from the SHOT Show to the Safari Club International to National Wild Turkey. Somebody there will put one of them up on top of their booth just as an attractor. You know,
sure. It attracts more than ducks, right?
Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
So with your experience with Mojo, you've been able to, you know, hunt all over the world for different species, big game, waterfowl. What's been your favorite waterfowl hunt or region to go to?
Well, yeah, I get asked that question a lot, Carson, especially relative just hunting in general. Mm-hmm. What do you like to hunt in general the most? And I don't have an answer to that because I like to hunt everything.
Yeah.
You know, I just like to be outdoors and hunt everything. But if I was going to go rabbit hunting tomorrow, I'd be just about as excited about that. But, you know, I love duck hunting, waterfowl hunting in general, not just duck hunting. But, you know, I've been fortunate enough to go African kill elephant, and I've got the North American grand slam of wild sheep, you know, and that was real exciting, you know, to do that. But it I don't think the species, you know, matters that much if you like to hunt, you know.
Yeah. And what about location that you've been to?
The most interesting location I've been to is, believe it or not, Peru.
Hmm. Oh.
Okay. And it wasn't necessarily the ducks. Randy Russell and I went down there. He had been there, and he said, come on, let's go down there. It's got the highest concentration of cinnamon teal in the world. And I don't know if that's true or not. That's what he said. But it's the only duck that got there, you know. So we go, and it's just the most interesting thing in the world. You land in this pretty big city of Arequipa, about 4 hours from the coast, and drive across this desert. I mean, the desert don't have a blade of grass or a bush or anything. It's just sand. And you come over this last hill, and there's the Pacific Ocean. And this river that these cinnamon teal on are coming out of central Peru, where the volcanoes are, and it runs into the Pacific Ocean right there where we were hunting. And it's the hunting was fantastic. Teal just flying up and down that little river. And so those guys would cut and make a map of cane. Cane grew all up and down the side of that river, so you really couldn't get to the water. You had to kind of cut a hole to get to the water. They would leave them together and put them out in the water. We would stand on it. So I don't know if you ever tried to shoot ducks down on a waterbed or not, but that's about what it
especially
amounted
teal,
to.
My goodness.
Got these fast, light little teal, you out there on a waterbed trying to shoot that. So it was very interesting. They had exposed human skeletons there, up where the sand was. And they took us and showed us a bunch of those. We got pictures, video, you know, all that stuff. And these were ancient people. I don't know how far back, but ancient. And but the local people, Peru, very, very poor country. And the local people were digging up these graves because some of the more elite of the ancient people, they would bury them with some type of treasures. The most desirable one, they said, was a feather shroud, which would bring about 50,000 U.S. a day, and they'd make it $400 a year. So they're digging up those graves just to get the treasures out of them. So there's all kinds of different things like that you saw. Wasn't the best duck I've ever been on by any means, but it was probably the most interesting trip of it.
Have you been out to California to hunt ducks yet?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say I have never hunted ducks in the state of California.
I've got to get you and Ramsey out here. I know Ramsey was out several years ago.
He's been there every year for the last few years. You know? Yeah. And we talked about me going with him, but I could never arrange it. I could never get the schedule to work out.
Well, I know
it's a storied waterfowl place. I mean, I don't think anybody in waterfowl don't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand it, how good we have it and the wonderful waterfowl hunting we do have. So when you and Ramsey get out here, make sure you look us up. I know we'll get you out and get you guys on maybe one of our properties or out shooting some Pacific flyway ducks and geese.
Okay, well, we should just set that up and do it. My buddy Chad Belton, he hunts out there every year also. You know?
Yep.
He's invited me, but my schedule never worked out on that either. But I would love to do it. It's something I think about. I see it in all the magazines. I see it on TV and videos, so it would certainly be a desirable thing to do.
Absolutely. We'll make it happen. We'll get Ramsey on this podcast as well.
That's one of the ones we haven't had yet.
I'm sure he's got some stories as well.
Oh, he's an excellent storyteller.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any new Mojo products coming down the pipeline that weren't shown at SHOT Show that you can give us a hint of, or are all the new ones out now that were...
No, we have about... I think 21 or 22 new products on the boards.
Wow.
That we're working on. They're not all waterfowl products, but most of them are. We had one product there at the SHOT Show that wasn't a waterfowl product per se. That's our new model of a pick stick. But it's an excellent tool for waterfowling, and it has a unintended consequence that people more likely pick up their empty hulls if they can do it conveniently like that. So
great product.
We got some. They in various stages of development. I can't really tell you what they are, but they mostly are.
Oh, it's just us. Nobody's listening.
Yeah. Well, I know better than that. I see the numbers you got to get on some of these things. It's incredible. I mean, to get the numbers like that, but it's we got some cool water motion products, even though it'd be pretty hard to one up that Mallard machine. I'm very, very proud of the Mallard machine. But we got some combination type spinning wing decoys, you know, things like that. And I'm just sitting here trying to think over that list. I don't really know or remember all those things.
So how does that happen? Do you sit around the boardroom or sit in the duck blind and just try to think of what you haven't thought of yet? And how does the concept really start?
You know Skip Knowles, an editor of Wildfowl magazine. And Skip's a good friend of mine. He asked me one time, I said, "Where you come up with all them ideas?" And I said, "Well, Skip, I tell you the truth, they come to me in the night." But all my adult life, I'd only sleep about an hour or two at a time. I'd wake up, and then I'd go back to sleep. I'd wake up, and you know, you got these thoughts. I think it happened to everybody, you know. And so, in the engineering business, I used to send them to my employees, you know, and got to be such a joke, I guess you'd call it a joke. You know, I said, "You get that email with them at 3 o'clock this morning?" So I quit doing it, and I sent them to myself now, and I sit forward them on about 7 o'clock. But they just kind of come to you, and some of the very best ones were right in front of your face at all times, and it took forever, ever to see them. So I don't know, you know, exactly why that is, but it's just, I'm sure about engineering – education and background has an influence upon it, but my engineer wasn't in these fields. I was in the civil engineering, but you know, it gives you the thought process, you know, or and it's basically you hunt a void, you know, can you identify a void in what products are available now? And if you can identify a void, you know, can you feel that void? It's a thought process somewhat like that. Or, you know, you're out hunting sometime and you say, "Man, if I had something to do this, it would really help." So you go back and see if you can make one. You know, we made a lot of accessories over the first few years. They were excellent products, but they wouldn't sell because in the beginning, all you needed was that Bojo Spinway decal. You didn't need accessories. And so we got a stack full of them back in the warehouse that's left over from those days where we developed it. We never sold it.
Yeah. How many things have you created that haven't come to light or just totally didn't work out that you thought?
I would guess 20, 30, 40.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of them. And some of them, you could sell them today if you went back to get them because now they're kind of into accessories and,
yep,
you know, things like that. But we wouldn't, you know, we put them, me and Murray Crowe one time made a decoy. We didn't make a decoy. We took a Mojo Mallard and we mounted it on a pole with a lifter spring, a valve lifter, a motor valve lifter spring, and pop riveted a plate to the bottom of it, and that thing would shake, and the paddle would be down in the water, you know, it's just making ripples all around it, which you didn't need it back then, you know.
Today
you need it, that'd be a great product. If you go back and look at those first few years of Mojo Mallard, they got three holes in the wing where you can set that wing offset, and so it vibrates a lot when it turns, and that was from products that we were making to, you know, make ripples on the water in addition to the spinning wing.
That's neat.
Development of products right there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just to hear that.
Yeah, next fall, you'll see three companies have that product. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, just what a testament to you. I mean, just being an inventor, to hear you had those many ideas that went through your mind and that don't work, I think that's just a testament to business and you know, and being that type of person that just throws it out there and tries it. I mean, good for you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you got to give better thought than I did about what the market's ready for right now. And, yeah, you know, some of that stuff the market just wasn't ready for. But it's a pretty fickle market, as you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not whether or not you have a great idea or not. It's whether or not that great idea's time is now.
Yeah.
That's makes very true. Sale.
I think, too, I equate it somewhat to a little bit to fishing, where sometimes stuff is made more for the fisherman than the fish, right? Sometimes you have to sell the duck hunter, not the ducks, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly
right. Like, how many is just the general floating duck decoys look just like the other ones? Yeah. And it's like, you know, they're just coming out with the next thing, unless it actually has an actual function to it, like water movement or motion. You know, it's just the next greatest and latest thing.
Sure.
Well, you see how the detail has improved on a lot of those decoys. And, you know, technology and materials and, you know, all that stuff allows you to do it. Detail and the detail on a lot of them are more than the bird. Mm-hmm. And that's because you try and sell it to the duck hunter, not the bird. We passed what a real bird looks like and some of that stuff.
Sure.
No, definitely. Well, Terry, we appreciate you coming on our podcast. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with? Any parting words of wisdom?
Well, I don't know if I have any words of wisdom or not, but I appreciate what you guys do for waterfowl hunting. Y'all probably want the better, if not the best, I would say the best of the more localized organizations that there are. Y'all probably done more for ducks in general. Even though I know you're focused on the California ducks, but then whatever you develop, you know, could pass across the whole, all the way around the world. So, you know, y'all deserve a whole lot of credit for what you did. And I appreciate it. And I know duck hunters in general appreciate it. And so if we can ever help y'all in any way, you let us know and we'll do that.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on this podcast. We really do.
Yeah, thanks for you guys have been really generous to our organization. We ask, you know, call it for a donation. You guys are happy to do that, and just nice to have, you know, brands like Mojo behind this organization, and appreciate you guys. And we'll make sure Chad Belding, Ramsey Russell, and Terry, you guys out here in Hunt, California. Let's get
maybe
it on
we
here.
Maybe we call the all on one hunt.
That'll work. We can make it happen.
I just want to be on the fly on the wall for that one. Sounds like fun.
Maybe we do a podcast while we're out there.
Heck yeah.
There you go.
There we go.
That'd be great.
All right, Terry. We appreciate it. Have a good rest of your day.
Yes, thanks, sir. Thanks, Terry. Enjoy being here.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.